Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hotel recliner just in the corner of the cockpit.
He's just operating a single, much smaller joystick by himself at the one.
His joystick's in a little cage. Yeah. Can't touch it or do any of the controls.
Boys here, the internet's number one international cooperation podcast is back for more giant robot action. I'm your host Peter O'Donohue, and I'm analog. I'm happy to say, while recording our bonus audio, my headache went away. I don't know if it was the Advil or the booze. Joining me inside my own mind are
I'm Ethan. I'm playing the monsters on this one. Jamie and Peter are teaming up inside of one body to fight me.
Yep. And to add Peter's analog, I am digital James Miller here for the cast.
There we go. So today's episode on Pacific Rim was requested by XD Drifty Z, Flo Heeken, our local car mechanic, and Broke Skill, which is a name I don't recognize. Still green, still on the server. So I think that's a first for Broke Skill over there. And also, if you want to request anything else, the Discord server is linked below. Also, welcome to our new patron, Ethan. I believe you brought him up.
Yeah, Steely Dan fan. Thanks for joining the Lore Folk fam.
I also like Steely Dan.
When you joined the server today, I was cooking in the kitchen and I put on some Steely Dan, and you inspired it directly, Steely Dan fan.
What'd you make?
What did I make? I just made some pizza.
There you go. What Steely Dan song did you listen to?
I was just thinking it was the second one.
Eat
on
your rice and beans. Do it again. That's the only Steely Dan song I know. I do know that Do It Again song, actually.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Pacific Rim? Have you seen both Pacific Rim films? You've seen neither.
I've seen Cloverfield Lane, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Is that the same?
Totally unrelated. Okay.
Okay.
I saw the prawn parody Pacific Rim.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
That was a good one.
Pacific
What's
Rim.
What's that one again, Jamie?
Lot of rim jobs.
Okay. Okay. It's not really plot, I don't think, but
somewhat for the story. I watch.
It's something to set up the rim jobs, right? Like the plot of Pacific Rim is fairly lean. It's just a setup robot punch monster. You need to set up like tongue punch fart box, right?
I got it. There's a bunch of evil tiny robots inside of the butts of men operating them and fighting them. And the only way to get the evil tiny robots out of the butts is to lick them out. Right. And then that stops the giant mech fight or the giant human fight.
It's a good excuse to have like three-way rim job porn because you need two pilots to pilot a Jaeger, right? So you've got they couldn't possibly do it alone, or else they'd have a seizure and die, which I guess we'll get into.
And where did you say this was streaming again, Jamie? Disney Plus?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
Is it on Crave or on Peacock? I'll subscribe to literally fucking anything to watch it, honestly. This is
if I ever heard a Hulu show, this is a Hulu show, right?
Yeah. The Rim Job show is definitely on Hulu.
Yeah. Crave is our HBO.
Hulu's Rim Job Hour.
Who is
presents the Rim Job Hour?
So I myself have seen the first film, I think about three times now. I watched it in theaters, once with friend of the show Kyle, and then I rewatched it on Thursday to get ready for the episode before I started writing. Mm-hmm. It's a fun film that I can recommend with like no caveats whatsoever. You know, I love me some Transformers and some modern Godzilla, and it's just like it's fun. But there is, other than the rim jobs, I suppose, there is no but. There is no but for Pacific Rim. It's all good all the time, right? It's just fun passion project made by Guillermo del Toro. And that guy has like tried to make, I think, 1,000 films in his life, and Hollywood just tells him to get fucked.
I was just
every time.
Does he make anything but a passion project? Like, does Hollywood really tell Guillermo del Toro of all people to get fucked when he's getting these crazy films greenlit?
Yes, because he's tried to make, I think, some like, and this is
oh,
like
a spider on my desk. Oh my god, spider on my desk.
Concerned about it.
I feel like a big Pacific Rim guy.
Squish it.
And he's on my Xbox controller now. He can hang out there.
Okay.
Sorry. Cool. It was just
get your cat. Fast.
He caught my just caught my eye.
Throw your cat at it. My cat loves eating those things.
Yeah, my cat eats bugs too.
Mine doesn't. He like plays with them. I watched him like just like slowly like patting an ant's head today. As it tried to run away, and then at some point it like got onto his hand, and he like lifts his paw up, and he like can't find where it went, and then it like moved on his paw, and he like freaks out, and he starts like biting his own paw. But
they're so dumb.
So I personally have not seen the second film, Pacific Rim Uprising, but that's kind of from this pre-COVID era of Hollywood where every single movie would. I didn't really anticipate all the butt stuff this early on in the episode. They would bend over backwards and let China do anything they wanted. they'd basically bend over backwards and do anything they wanted to them. So the plot of Pacific Rim Uprising, at least chunk of it, is about an evil Chinese corporation. I mean, evil in the propaganda sense.
Yeah, sure.
Manufacturing mechanical drones. Which eventually go crazy and then become the enemy.
Big this trouble is the... in little Chinese buttholes.
I mean, it is very Hollywood to take an American company like Boston Dynamics and say, but what if they were Chinese, huh?
Yeah, well, then they go crazy and they're dangerous.
Be truly evil. Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is the exact same plot of Transformers 4, where there's a Chinese company melting down dead Transformers and making Transformers drones, and then they all go crazy and are the bad guys.
Yeah.
From what I'm told in Pacific Rim Uprising, this entire plot point is resolved in under 10 minutes, where to Transformers 4's credit, it is part of the film at the very least. there is that. What are the Hollywood sickos trying to tell us about Chinese drones, Ethan?
Yeah, what if Raytheon, but foreign, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, could you imagine if those good boys at Raytheon weren't there to protect us?
Yeah, exactly. Those good, heroic white drones is what we're trying to talk about. Anyway, West Coast is best coast, so let's get into it. Pacific Rim, the first one, the film opens with a little narration explaining the state of the world back in the distant and fictional past of 2013. So on August 10th, 2013, a massive reptilian monster, later codenamed Trespasser, emerged from the ocean and destroyed San Francisco. 800 tents full of copper wire and catalytic converters were crushed underfoot and washed out into the ocean, causing an estimated $130 in damages. Devastating the local economy, and even by the second film in 2025, it has not recovered. So you guys can open up the image. The first image is there for both you and the patrons of Trespasser. Of course, because it is Del Toro, the creature and mechanical designs are top tier across the board.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, at all times. I don't know if I wrote this in later on, but it is one of these things. Every single kaiju, which is the generic term used for all of the invading monsters, were designed as though they could be a suit. So they're full CG. There are no practical kaiju. There's a practical kitty cat. Yeah. Look at her go.
I'm sorry.
She's popping off.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Every single kaiju in the film is the CGI render is just like there could be a guy in there, every single one of them. There's like a crab one, all the reptilian ones, there's a bat one at some point. All of them are designed around like there could be an actor hunched over inside of it the entire time.
Cool.
Some of those actors are so impressive. Like, you watched a guy show the difference in apes, like an ape, like how strong they walk, and then like how like a little monkey is a lot more curious and bouncy, and like the way that they have the range of like, I can't imitate animals that well. I barely imitate a human when I walk around.
You want to do the monkey arms when you get excited up top here, right?
Yeah.
If I had to assign you a primate, I'd probably give you orangutan.
I'll take that.
Jamie?
Yeah.
He's ginger. I've seen an ginger. Orangutan use a saw badly, and I've never seen Jamie use a saw at all. So.
I can use a saw, probably.
Yeah.
Like a handsaw? Like a hacksaw?
I think so. Why not? Yeah. orangutan. I feel like my arms aren't quite long enough, but I'll take that.
It's like an energy thing, you know. It's like what you do with your arms, not their proportion to you. But
oh, okay. I'm like in the DK rap. I'm lanky. I'm the goofball.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So you would be Diddy, I think. You're kind of like a Diddy. Well, maybe I don't know if you have DK energy. I feel like you have like. Right next to the.
I'd give Ethan Diddy because he's always wearing a hat, except for some reason now. I guess because his hair's wet.
I think I'm Candy Kong, guys. Honestly, I'm the hot one.
Ooh.
I'm the hot one. Yeah.
His legs, Ethan's legs are from here to Babylon, baby.
Who's the big, strong, the huge, strong one? He can like lift boulders too with relative ease.
I'm not going to remember his name.
I don't recall, yeah.
Anyways.
I'm sure we have an episode about the DK crew somewhere out there.
We do. I listened to the rap on stream. We streamed this week and we were all having fun with the rap.
Chunky Kong.
Chunky. I'll tell you, I can be chunky. Lift boulders with relative ease. That's a great power. It's applicable in day-to-day lifting boulders.
Yeah, especially with your current career of working up at noon and working from home.
Yeah. Get up at 10.
So Trespasser, prior to the emergence of Trespasser, a magnitude 7.1 earthquake was recorded off the coast out in the Pacific Ocean. Some people theorize that it was its first steps on the seabed.
I was going to guess that he came from the Kong Hollow Earth at the center of the planet. And we didn't describe him, but he has like an axe blade for a face, I guess. Like he's got a big axe blade coming out of his face.
He does. Yeah. The front of his face is a big kind of is like a tomahawk fan. Like tomahawk blade.
He just like axed his way through the tectonic plate. And that's what caused the earthquake, right?
Oh, yeah, God. Or it could have been the breach itself opening up, which we'll get into. We'll get into the entire setup of like where monster come from.
We're he's like a Leafs. I'm so excited.
We are absolutely
on Hulu too.
He's like a woodpecker. He's got to start at like 7 a.m. with that big fucking nose cracking through the molten crust right next to me, man.
Fucking monsters come through the breach again. I'm trying to goddamn sleep.
Bang, bang. Imagine how noisy that big old face going through rock would be. Jeez.
Yeah, it's also like 500 feet tall. It cuts the Golden Gate Bridge in half. So that is that's a rude awakening. I'd take the woodpecker personally, but.
You know, like in movies where you'd see the water like just shaking the glass slightly.
Yeah, but
that one the guy hits right next to your house and the water just flies off.
you're suddenly like Mr. Leahy from Trailer Park Boys, like coming down the steps.
Yeah. I love that gif is like ingrained in meme society because I love Trailer Park Boys.
Canadian boys, we have to.
Yeah, gotta wrap up. Mm-hmm. So a trespasser emerged near the Golden Gate Bridge, destroying it, like I said, and then it set out on a
Baltimore. Was he also the one in Baltimore that did it? He was driving that boat.
yeah. 500-foot lizard is the one that fell asleep at the wheel of that boat in Baltimore. That Singaporean boat in Baltimore destroyed that fucking bridge. So yeah, just on the subject of that, Pete Buttigieg, the transport guy in Sleepy Joe's administration, has. Mm-hmm. As far as a completely useless man goes, would not have been set up for failure harder for this entire 3.5 years, dude. Like that poor son of a bitch. Every trains derailing and poisoning people in Ohio,
right?
Literally every day for a week or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Airplanes are falling apart in the sky, and now a boat hits a bridge. Like, dude,
trains derailing because rail companies refusing to pay. A second guy to be on a train, like an entire fucking 3 mile long train. They're like, yeah, one guy's good to drive it for 19 hours straight.
Yeah.
And then So they try and unionize to push that back. And then Joe Biden, executive, like his boss, executive orders, tells him, like, no, you can't unionize. You get back to work.
Because Sleepy Joe had to save Christmas, remember?
Yeah.
Because they were like, we're going to stop shipping before Christmas.
I mean, Canada's not that much better. We need a lot of work on our railroads.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, well, like, even when a few years ago we had Lac-Mégantic, which is in Quebec, not so far from where we were. I was really close to it.
It blew up, yeah.
It derailed in the town and blew up, like, into a local bar and shit. Like, it was really messed up. But I was thankful for that because Bobby works with drilling, so he got to stay with me all summer because he got shipped out to Mégantic. So I was really sad, but I got to hang out with Bobby and order pizza and make chicken wings on the barbecue every night with him.
Yeah, the one thing that stuck with me on his description of, because he was essentially doing like core sample drilling in the town of Mégantic to see like, oh, how far is the contamination of oil spread? And he described light posts as just being like completely melted down to piles of metal. Like they're just like little heaps of metal light posts. I was like, damn.
Insane. Too. And like, really stuck with me. And it can blow up like anywhere, right? It blew up in town, like where there's a lot of shit. Yeah. Very bad.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, the train accidents poisoning everything around them is not super irrelevant for this episode here, because the kaiju themselves have toxic blood, which is a problem that the world needs to solve when they just like, it's a giant monster, much like an oil tanker. It's just a massive monster full of poison, basically. So when that kind of falls to pieces. So yeah, Trespasser emerged at the Golden Gate Bridge, destroying it, and then set out on a six-day rampage through California. Nothing of value was lost. Mm-hmm. The combined forces of the U.S. and England finally resorted to using three tactical nukes to fucking kill it, sacrificing Oakland, California in the process on August 15th. So it's very much a Pyrrhic victory. Mm-hmm. I do like that the lore does not mention Canada helping to stop the giant monster that is just right there. They had to bring in the RAF because, I mean, as a lot of people would know, right? No, exactly, but a lot of people would also know, like, a lot of the Canadian military equipment was bought off like Facebook Marketplace from a real country. Like,
what about all these Chinese drones?
Exactly. Yeah,
the rest of Canada just wanted to like reset BC. We're like, you know what, if we just like level it, start fresh, we could build new houses, there's gonna be room for us out there.
Yeah, I mean, just, frankly, the rent in Vancouver right now, I think for like a corrugated sheet metal shack is like $3,000 a month. I think a big monster might hit a little reset button over on the East Coast there.
Think about, you know, this guy's 500 feet tall and has an axe blade for a face.
Yes, he's a great logger.
Think about how many trees he could cut down on First Nation land for the Canadian
government.
It'd be huge for them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then ship all that coal to China to make drones.
He can clear cut, you know, entire swaths of Native American land in Canada to run natural gas pipelines that could spill gas all over them, you know, or oil pipelines, all sorts of good stuff.
Honestly. You know what else? Instead, so you've heard of the wall down south. How about for our south and U.S.'s north, we get a moat? Just get that guy to axe his face right away, all the way across. A moat with some, I don't know what we can keep. We can't keep piranhas. Can't keep lizards very well. It gets too cold. Mm-hmm. Glass.
Like a muskie or something would be nice.
Leopard seals.
Leopard seal. Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Those are cute.
They're pretty angry. I saw a guy today fight a seal underwater for a fish. And I'm like, dude, let the seal have the fish. He's going to win that fight every time. But the seal was scared. And I don't know who got it in the end because the clip cut off. But I hope the guy got it because he really fought for it.
Pete said leopard seals are pretty cute. So I Googled one just to be sure. This one seems to have like...
Is it not?
A transistor in the top of his head. I mean, they're pretty cute. They're not as cute as like...
Elephant seals.
Oh, yeah. This one does straight up have a microchip in its head. What? Why is it the first photo?
I don't know. Sleepy Joe microchipping our leopard seals.
The Chinese sent their balloons. The Chinese sent seals.
Look at this one. The patrons will get this. If you go to patreon.com/theloreboys, you'll get these. Look at this guy. He's going to be an emote in this service.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that thing.
I feel like that's what dogs look like when they look at you from behind, too. You know, it's
yeah,
it's when
yeah,
their
yeah,
cheeks
yeah,
get all bunched up and they're so cute.
Yeah. That's so cute. And also, Jamie, it's funny you bring it up. It's you guys have accidentally set up a bunch of things we'll get into. We'll get into a wall later on. Don't you worry about it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about Chinese, because usually you find a way to get a Chinese voice in somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could say that. Trespasser was later dissected and its skull was put up on display in a museum. Initially, the governments around the world figured that this was a one-off. So it's very much they took the attitude like climate change isn't real because today was cold when it comes to giant reptiles emerging from the ocean, basically.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Until 6 months later, when another gigantic monster attacked Manila in the Philippines. Terrible for Jamie's margins. After a second attack on August 10th, after the second attack, August 10th was henceforth known as K-Day, which for some reason the wiki states is like, might be a reference to D-Day. Like, oh yeah.
you think?
The K in K-Day is a reference to the Japanese word kaiju, meaning strange beast. The film translates it as large beast. I don't speak Japanese, so I can't say which one is correct. Not that it matters, because all of the kaiju that emerge out of the Pacific Ocean are both large and very strange.
You guys ever participated in V-Day on Valentine's Day, where you have to storm a bridge and try and find a mate really quick?
Nope.
No? Okay.
I got my cock blown off in V-Day.
Oh, man.
Cupid's arrow took me out of the balls.
Ouch.
So every monster would eventually become known as a kaiju as a generic term, like I said, and they're all also given an individual code name like Leatherback, Mutavore, or Otachi, as well as a class 1 through 5 depending on their size, in the same way kind of meteorologists will classify a tornado or a hurricane. So the way they measure it is like, now they've got sensors all over the ocean, the amount of water it displaces, how much radiation is coming off of it, and basically the general size of a kaiju is how they assign a class to it.
Yeah, okay. The first 26 kaijus are always females, listed from A to Z, and then the next 26 are all male names going from A to Z, so you can keep track of them all, right?
Yeah. Exactly. The big kind of seal-looking one is Katrina, and it just devastated Louisiana. Yeah.
Right.
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 George Bush goes down to look at all the blue blood in the water. He's like, oh, that's terrible. Sounds a little more like Bill Clinton. I can't remember what George Bush looks sounds like. I can't remember what George Bush looks like, guys. Who is he?
He looks like a man getting a shoe thrown at his head.
I love that video.
Same. I'm still thinking about the forests in BC and the big kaiju chopping them down, man. I remember in school, I don't know if this is true anymore. Living. They used to say that the wood, like the foliage above the trees in BC were so thick you could walk on top of the trees and you wouldn't fall through. But I don't believe that
for a second. The tip of a branch is so thin.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, though. It's so thick and full of life. But maybe that was before we destroyed everything. I don't know.
I mean, one of my only memories from kindergarten was us having a big discussion about what made the dinosaurs go extinct. And it was like, there was no right answer to the discussion. It was like, oh yeah, volcanoes, they probably did it. And like, you know, asteroid probably did it. And like, it was anything these children said, it was like, yeah, that could have done it, which is like a fun exercise. But just goes to show you that like school's not always right, Jamie.
No, I know. They're just screening the children. At that age, all you have is your parents' opinions on what happened. the communists got rid of the dinosaurs.
He said Sleepy Joe got rid of the dinosaurs.
My parents say you're a communist for saying there were dinosaurs.
Yeah.
It's very funny that all these stupid, because obviously Pacific Rim is a very fun film, but it's very dumb and simple. I do love that every stupid joke you guys are making right now, especially the ones about being a 5-year-old, is relevant later in the episode. It's great. Okay. We'll talk about the dinosaurs going extinct later on. Don't you worry about it.
I'll take one more shot in the dark of something that might be relevant. 9/11, of course. So I just think I also remember we had a substitute French teacher, Mr. Gravel, and I so distinctly remember it was probably like a year after 9/11, him like writing. I just had this memory the other day. I was like, and like for the first time realized like, oh, he was just insane, where he wrote out like 9/11. And then he said to us, like, what does that look like? And we're like, he's like, that's
9-1-1.
9-1-1. And he's like, that's why they planned it on that day. And I just had like maybe like a week ago, I had the thought, I was like, oh no, that's just a crazy person saying that with conviction.
He had a stroke like sometime before we joined him at school. Like he wasn't all there, but he also
he had a brain tumor, I think.
Or brain tumor, that was it. I remember something about his brain. Yeah. He also used to rub my back whenever we were like in kindergarten taking naps, and it was so innocent. It was like, just have a good sleep. But I was just thinking about that too. I was like, Mr. Gravel, you could never get away. You could not rub a kid's back at school in this day and age.
I mean, right? I'm sure you do in kindergarten. Like for sure, the daycare educators that I send my daughter to, I would hope they're rubbing her back to get her to sleep because she's not gonna sleep otherwise. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
But when Mr. Gravel took that shit in the litter box in class, that was something else.
That's too far.
Sorry, it was kind
he's
of
like squad over. He's just like 911. Why don't you think they planned it?
Yeah,
bunch of 6 year olds just sitting cross legged on a carpet, just like.
Sorry, I had to go. It was a 911 emergency.
So the scale that governments are using to judge, to classify a kaiju at this point, is called the Sarazawa scale, which is named after the character in the original 1954 Godzilla film. And also Godzilla 2014 and King of the Monsters. There's another Sarazawa.
Is it like, does the 1954 film Godzilla exist in the Pacific Rim universe? Like, is it, are they... Does some scientist who discovers these kaiju in Pacific Rim say, oh, we should name this after the Godzilla character? Or is it just like the movie makers of Pacific Rim made it as a nod?
It's from what I saw, because the trivia section at the bottom of Wiki pages is whatever. And sadly not a whole lot of firsthand information I could go get other than rewatch the film.
They do not mention it in the film.
It is from supplemental text. Guarantee, I mean, Loreboy's canon. These guys have been watching Godzilla since the 50s, and then a giant monster came out of the ocean. They were just like, we got it. We fucking got it, boys. I'd say Loreboy's canon.
They named them Sarazoas, not Godzillas.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, I'd say Loreboy's canon. The entire Godzilla series up until 2013 when the monsters attacked would be canon. Because obviously the first American Godzilla that came out recently, and again, I talk about Godzilla Cross Kong on the bonus episode, patreon.com/theloreboys. Making that film in 2014 after a monster attacked San Francisco and setting the final fight in San Francisco would probably be in bad taste, right? I think like they had to take the Twin Towers out of Spider-Man. They'd probably just be like, guys, take the monster out of San Francisco, okay? take it somewhere else. They have to recut the film. They did have to butcher it.
Speaking of 9/11, you ever see that Jenga sales chart? And it dips in 2001, 2002, and it goes back to normal, yeah.
Makes sense.
People are so stupidly empathetic where they're just like, Jenga makes me feel sad. Like that? What the fuck, dude?
I mean,
yeah,
it was a tragedy.
It was just a lot of pressure, you know. And
never forget, but it's just very funny.
It's like Jenga. It's a lot of pressure, man. Like if you lose, you're a terrorist.
You're right.
Yeah, true.
That's how it is.
Can you imagine getting the center Jenga piece out with a little dart, like a little 9/11 move there? Like you throw like a dartboard dart at it, just like knock it out of the middle.
New game unlocked. You got two towers and you got little toy planes. You got to push the blocks out with the toy planes.
Or the little slingshot planes on the spring, on the rubber band, right?
Bum, 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 bum. Hello, my name is Peter, and I'm here willing to sell 20% of my company.
This is Dragon's Den?
Yeah, exactly. This is like Jenga, but we call it the Twin Towers. And the lady pulls the thing out away. You start shooting little dart planes at two Jenga towers.
You got Kevin O'Leary there. He's like, oh, this is kind of fun, actually.
Yeah. You know, I invest in life, marriage, and death. This falls into the death category.
Not to get too in the weeds here, because I know we're already way off track. Yeah. But I've been getting like scam ads on YouTube. So like in the YouTube app, I get these like big ads that are scam. They're CBC News, so Canadian, you know, Crown Corporation Broadcasting. And they're like, there's a, I'm pretty sure it's deep fake technology of a news anchor. I don't recognize a news anchor like as a CBC anchor or anything like that, but it doesn't seem natural. But I also just get these like pictures of like Kevin O'Leary arrested or whatever, and it says like CBC News, but then the link is to some like crypto exchange thing, like it's some like farming thing. It's so weird.
Why do they think you care about Kevin O'Leary?
It's
dying,
so weird. Dude. It's all like CBC News, like branded content, and it's all like I get so many ads, different ads about like what did Kevin O'Leary do, and then it's all like pointing to this like weird AI crypto exchange. I don't know.
Yeah. Ads online have been just fucking horrible. I do have another image for you guys here. We have a official image of Otachi, as well as one from a fur affinity, drawn with colored pencil by someone I think should be lobotomized. Otachi is pregnant for some reason in the film, so obviously the pencil crayon drawing of it having a big belly button.
Jamie,
and being inflated.
I take it back. I think you're right about the fetishists being on the cutting edge of animation with this drawing. Honestly.
Absolutely,
Clearly, they're leading the industry.
I can't even tell the first one's pregnant. So,
yeah.
You know, for a second, if you didn't say the one on the right was the drawing, I probably would have assumed that this one was. Actually in the movie, and the one on the left was probably like fan art because the one on the right is so good, you know.
I really like that the under jaw area on the pencil crayon one, where it's just like almost looks like things you could pop off of them. There's like all these.
I'm not sure what's going on. He's got like a huge chin covered in like blue pimples.
Yeah. So the monster in the movie kind of has like a frog, like an inflatable sack that it can it inhales and shoots out a bunch of acid. And that's how it defeats one of the...
And is that thing in the middle of its sternum, its cloaca, presumably?
I thought it was the belly button, but like someone was just really into belly buttons, so make it
I'm pretty sure it's the weird like pregnant lady belly button thing, because Otachi is pregnant in the film, which is why this is the fetish one, and none of the other kaiju are pictured.
No. Putting the cloaca on the stomach wouldn't make it the fetish one.
Pregnant ladies don't have belly buttons. Pregnant ladies give belly buttons.
Yeah, that's true. They lose their belly button. Your belly button falls off, you have to regrow it.
Yeah, it goes through the umbilical cord into the other person's belly button.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I struggled to get into the mind. I was going to say, I struggled to get into the mind of a fetishist. I struggled to get into the mind of this kind of fetishist, personally. So I could not. I don't have any Loreboy's canon for this one, personally. But the cloaca is on the front.
Yeah. Okay.
Two more kaiju attacked after Manila, one in Cabo, don't know where that is, and one in Sydney. So the United Nations finally got their shit together and decided to do something about it, which is far and away the least believable part of this episode. For the first time in history, the UN agreed that bombing cities and killing civilians constantly is bad.
Okay.
And decided to form the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps, or the PPDC, which is what we'll refer to it for the rest of the episode. On September 15th, 2014, which for some reason is in this film, it's also my dad's 51st birthday, or was, the UN decided to sanction the Jaeger program presented by Dr. Jasper Schoenfeld, who is not in the movies. There's a comic, I think, called like Kaiju Year Zero or something, or Pacific Rim Year Zero that came out. This is where a lot of the pre-film lore comes from. It's a lot of supplemental material, right? Like,
yeah.
It's very goofy, but I love this. After the first few kaiju attacks, Dr. Schoenfeld saw his son making his robot toys and his monster toys fight, and he was just like struck with inspiration. He's like, "I need $1 trillion for the UN. I got an idea for them." All of a sudden,
okay. I'm just gonna say, wait for the Gundam episode because they just ripped off Gundam. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
I guarantee, because I know that Del Toro loves anime.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, exactly.
Guaranteed. Yeah. He had like DVD stacks of DVDs, Gundam and Godzilla, and he was just like, "I'm gonna make a movie."
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he just like slapped Ron Perlman on the thigh to wake him up, who was obviously passed out in the recliner next to him, and he's just like, "Okay, we're making a movie, dude," because Ron Perlman is in all of his films now.
Yeah, I gotta say, guys, I'm pretty stuck on this pencil crayon drawing of this pregnant dinosaur.
I had to force close it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to X out of that one.
I learned this week, like, talking about cloacas, that I don't know the exact number. Well, there was cloacas on that thing.
Yeah, people have cloacas, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. There was that birds, most birds don't have penises. Like only 10% of birds have penises or something. But when they have sex, they just mash their cloacas together.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's common how cloacas knowledge. Work.
Okay. Well, why do they only give a few of the birds penises?
I don't know. I didn't know any birds had dong.
Yeah. No. Ducks are doing like quadruple duty,
famously famous penises. Yeah.
Yeah. Ducks got birds, dong, baby.
Birds show dong. Show hog. Waddle. Anatomy.
A waddle's on the front. That's like the turkey thing. The George Lucas neck is a waddle.
What birds have pee-pee?
Well, while you look that up, we'll continue.
Ducks, geese, and swans. Large flightless birds, just as ostrich. Can you imagine an ostrich?
Wait.
Hog?
So if you get a dong, you don't get to fly?
No, ducks can fly. So can swans and geese.
Some of them.
Oh.
But large flightless birds, such as ostriches and emus and tinamous, a family of reptilian birds closely related to ratitties.
Imagine when you're born as a bird, you just go through the line and they're like, all right, you want to fly, you want a dick.
Yeah.
We'll just survey on the way out of heaven.
Yeah, exactly. And then just check it off. We'll try and get you what you want. We'll try and get you what you want. And then you're like some sort of prestige soul, you could be one that has both.
But, don't Google ostrich penis, guys. I don't want to do the show anymore.
I have to.
I gotta go late. No, don't do it, Jamie. I gotta go
late. It's gotta be very alien. Anyway.
Opening incognito for this one.
It's not alien enough is honestly my problem with it.
Ew. I hate that.
Oh.
Jamie worried about one of his roommates, aka his dog and his cat, searching his browser history, apparently.
Hey, I like to keep it clean. When I like to be able to use my browser on stream and not worry about what comes up.
That's true.
That would be the top of like LSF, right? Like,
yeah.
Live stream fail if you got the do ostrich cock on top of your search history.
Oh, actually, what it looks like is the other side of a Pacific Rim. If somehow you had a picture, a camera on the inside. It really looks like a tongue coming out of a butthole.
Horrible. God. Nature is unseemly. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Dr. Schoenfeld, after seeing an ostrich penis fighting a robot toy or something, Dr. Schoenfeld, along with Dr. Caitlin Lightcap, the woman he was cheating on his wife with, began working on the technology that would allow humans to pilot war machines large enough to push back the kaiju invasion. Caitlin Lightcap had developed a system called the PONS, which is old Italian for bridge, while working at DARPA, which is a real U.S. government agency that researches new ways to kill people who fight with sticks and rocks.
Mm-hmm.
The PONS technology allowed a pilot to interact directly and control a machine much larger than themselves in order to fight a kaiju. The first Jaeger ever constructed was named Brawler Yukon, which is a great name, and going forward, all of them have fucking fantastic names.
Cool.
She was built in Alaska and was presented to the PPDC with U.S. Air Force Captain Adam Casey at the helm on January 30th, 2015. So they got their shit together real quick.
Much faster than the real-life UN ever could get anything organized.
Okay, so the real-life UN couldn't get anything organized ever.
Given infinite time, yeah.
given infinite time and infinite universes and infinite chances, the UN would still achieve nothing. But yeah, so by January 30th, 2015, they had Brawler Yukon up and ready to go, which is the next photo. This is from the comic. You'll notice going forward with a lot of the following Jaegers, which are the giant mechs that they use to fight the kaiju. This one is not really humanoid at all. It kind of looks like the front part of a jet with kind of shoulder pauldrons and weird spider legs.
Yeah. It's got like four legs and arms. And it looks like it has like its cloaca is kind of just like a slit in the middle of its chest, I guess. And then its dong is a flashlight.
Huh. They did figure out where to position the genitals on Jaegers in later. This is a Mark One. By Mark Three, their atomic cloacas were positioned properly.
Yeah, okay. They have the cyberpunk cloaca physics.
Yeah, exactly.
That reminds me. This week I beat the Ratchet and Clank game, and they have the woman robot that they add in to be the other part for Clank.
Boots on head.
boobs on Ed. They give her just two little things like little.
She has
Nikki.
Like siren lights.
Or little Nikki. Yeah.
Yeah. So like a ship, all Jaegers are referred to by name or as she. And shortly after powering up during the demonstration, Captain Casey lost control of the Jaeger, had a seizure, and died. We will get into the remainder of the Jaeger program after the break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for listening to that ad. So during the second test, this is all still within Brawler Yukon, in February 2015, Lieutenant Sergio D'Onofrio also suffered a seizure, but before losing complete control of the Jaeger and like melting his fucking brain, Dr. Lightcap connected herself to the pawn system as well to take some pressure off D'Onofrio's brain. This had confirmed her theory that piloting a Jaeger was far too much for one person to handle, and also initiated the first drift sequence, which they go over a lot more in the movie. It is the process of completely merging two people's minds so that they function as the left and right hemispheres of the Jaeger's brain, in quotes, basically.
I had a friend named Cody who lost control of the Jaeger once, too.
This is one of the few things that I knew about or know about Pacific Rim, I guess, is that it takes two people to pilot one.
It's two to tango, yeah.
Yeah, I assume it's to have some sort of like training montage at some point where they're two people are learning to do it together, right?
Yeah, so the drift is referred to as the process of linking two people together at a brain cell lever and co-piloting the Jaeger, getting out of speak here. Later in the project, pilots... this is the montage you were talking about. Later in the project, pilots were auditioned, in a sense, to ensure they were drift compatible, which was maximizing their combat abilities, ensuring both pilots were kept as safe as possible, making the Jaeger as effective as possible. There is a training sequence where the first protagonist, Raleigh, played by Charlie Hunnam, is auditioning and fighting other guys. They do like a Japanese, like bow staff fighting thing, basically. Okay. Sure. And then they later find out that, like, frankly, this whole sequence in the movie doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but I don't fucking care, because it is if you need to karate fight to find a pilot to like co-pilot your robot and punch a lizard in the face, fine. Like, the payoff is well worth it. Yeah, it is discovered that Mako Mori, the like adopted Japanese daughter of what's his name? Striker Pentecost, which is Idris Elba's character in the movie.
That's his name? Oh my god.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Striker Pentecost. The names, the main guy's name is like Raleigh something, but we will talk about two Australian guys. Yeah, Raleigh, North Carolina. We will talk about two other guys that are named like Hercules and Chuck are like pilots of another Jaeger later on.
That's see nice. A lot of parallels with Dragon Ball Z with the fusion, Godzilla pink, Godzilla. I guess that's a different movie, but with all these big
different mechanics, franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, relevant to a conversation we had, similar genre, definitely.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
And of the same lineage that inspired Pacific Rim, for sure, 100%, right? Like,
yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely Godzilla inspired.
Drift compatibility is quite rare, so piloting crews quickly became celebrities with like toys, like the like Kyle, friend of the show, Kyle has a couple of the Pacific Rim action figures. He loves the movie. The action figures are canon.
Basically. Man. What if someone linked with your wife and you couldn't link with her in the same way, and you kind of got like mind robot cucked?
Pacific cucked, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like instead of like, you know, like in the cockpit of an airplane, they've got the rumble seat. It's just like the cuck seat is like the perpendicular one in the back of the cockpit.
Yeah. Hotel recliner just in the corner of the cockpit.
And he's just operating a single, much smaller joystick by himself at the one.
His joystick's in a little cage. Yeah. Can't touch it or do any of the controls.
Just a big beefy dude mind linked with your wife.
Yeah. Look, instead of being drift compatible, they're like bull compatible. It's you need to drift with the guy's mind.
What did you say your name was again? Hercules? Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. So yeah, drift compatibility is quite rare. So like I said, they made action figures of both the Jaegers and also the kaiju that they've killed. So there are like kaiju fans out in the world, which I watched a video about this, which I'll reference later on, where it's just like, this is like a guy being a fan of the planes that did 9/11. It is like so fucking weird that there are fans of kaiju, especially because the timeline is so condensed. Like the period of time that we're looking at between Trespasser showing up in 2013 and like the end of the second film is like between 2013 and 2025. It's like over the course of 12 years, they're just like, yeah, I'm gonna get Bin Laden tattooed on my back. It's gonna be great.
I don't know how to tell you this, but there probably are people who are fans of Bin Laden and his work, right?
I wouldn't mind meeting him.
Crunch at us if you're listening.
Crunch at us if you're... If you're pro Taliban, we want to know. We want to interview you and do his Chinese accent.
I can't wait for that episode.
Oh my goodness.
So in April of 2015, the Jaeger program was fully approved after Dr. Lightcap and Lieutenant D'Onofrio piloting Brawler Yukon defeated a kaiju named Karloff, saving the city of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Boo.
Yay. Brawler Yukon continued fighting during the Kaiju Wars. However, she only ever confirmed two kills and was destroyed at an unknown time between 2015 and 2020 by an unknown Kaiju. Jaegers all have two names. The primary Jaeger in the film is named Gypsy Danger. Along with her, there's also Cherno Alpha, Crimson Typhoon, and Striker Eureka. So you guys can bring up the photo there of the four main kaiju, four main Jaegers of the first film.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So Gypsy is the primary one in the front with the big reactor core in the middle of her chest. Behind her on, I guess, our left, stage right, is Crimson Typhoon, the red one. That is the Chinese one. Yes, it has three pilots instead of two, each one of them controlling three arms. It's so funny because it is my favorite designed one in the film. The pilots, the triplets that they have, actually have no dialogue whatsoever. They have zero spoken lines in the entire film and are killed within 5 minutes of being deployed.
Oh, good.
The three-armed one's gotta be the cuck guy, right? Like where the wife and the man who can actually connect with her, they get it split down the middle, and then the cuck guy just has the one arm that's tacked on the back.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, so this one has like two saw blade arms, and then just of course the hotel recliner is on the end of the third arm.
Yeah,
is what that one works like.
We have Scissorhands, and we have Buckethead. I like Buckethead personally.
Scissorhands is Striker Eureka. That is the newest and most expensive Jaeger ever built. And then the Buckethead one is the last remaining Mark One. That is the Russian Cherno Alpha. That one is also very fucking cool.
Yeah, it looks cool.
A couple of other excellent names I came across in the list of Jaegers were Puma Real and Chrome. So I was thinking about like
Real? What? I'm not going to poo your real, Peter. Jesus.
Puma Real. I think it's a South American one. It's probably the Peruvian one or Argentina, whoever's on the Pacific coast there.
They're probably pronounced Puma Real.
Puma Real, yeah. And then also Chrome Brutus, which is a fantastic name as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Brutus. Four Jaegers in the film are all from a different manufacturing lines. So their abilities are very different, as are their kind of art styles and construction. Cherno Alpha, Buckethead, is a Mark 1. Gypsy is a Mark 3. Crimson is a Mark 4. And Striker, like I said, is the one and only Mark 5 in existence. The Scissorhand one being the sleekest, most... It's also the fastest one. It's the newest, most advanced one, which is why there's it's much more anime designed and looks less like just the middle section of a fucking battleship, which is cool. Kind of what the Buckethead one looks like, right?
I guess there's a pretty tense moment in the movie when that one goes down and they realize that they gotta finish the fight with the old one, right?
Yeah, that is exactly what happened.
I know.
Yes. Okay. So yes, Ethan, we did by accident rewrite this entire movie to the letter over the course of this podcast.
It's like you say, it's, I don't think it was meant to be a defining piece of film, right? Which I think Guillermo del Toro often doesn't do, but he does what he wants to do, and he has fun with it, right?
He's a cool guy. I love him to death. I love that he's still making movies. I'm really sad that his version of At the Mountains of Madness was canceled fucking 9 times. And they booted his ass off The Hobbit, and then we just got the fucking sludge that dumped out of Legendary Pictures eventually, where they enslaved Peter Jackson with a voodoo doll.
Ethan, is that a Stanley Cup?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you were our best white girl on the cast.
It's a David's tea mug.
He is our best white girl. David's tea's close.
Yeah.
It's close, okay.
I'm Candy Kong.
True. Yeah.
Yep. So what's really cool is the attention to the detail they gave all four of the Jaegers in the film. They're all animated differently. So the Russian one, the Cherno Alpha, the Buckethead, is very kind of deliberate and brutal because it's an OG. And then the Gypsy Danger is very normal, very humanoid. But then Crimson Typhoon with three arms, it has rockets on its back, which is how it redirects its body so it can punch monsters, which is super fucking neat. And it's also very sleek. And then, of course, Striker Eureka is just a fucking Gundam. It just does anything it wants because it's so advanced at this point.
Striker Eureka probably was animated by a different studio altogether. It's so advanced. There's probably the DeviantArt artists who are cutting edge in animation technology, right? Who are probably animated.
Dude, your cat's totally getting that spider behind you, right? By the way, killed a bug in the corner there.
So I did see the spider shortly after we had the discussion. I didn't want to interrupt us again for another spider update, but I did see it run across the wall here, and I hit him on the head with a pen and pointed at it, and he looked at it and went back to sleep. So I don't know where the spider is, but it's somewhere over here. He might have got another bug though.
Yeah, went after something. He's going up to bed now. It's been a little much.
Yeah, there he goes. Yeah. So every single Jaeger has body language. Gypsy was based off of the MMA fighter George St. Pierre. Okay. While Striker is much, much faster, despite being the same size.
It's a local legend, man.
I know.
From around here, yeah.
So Striker's body language was inspired by the football player Lester Hayes, who is also known as Lester the Molester, which is a great little trivia in there. So like I said, Cherno Alpha is all melee all the time, relying on two big square hands to just beat the shit out of a kaiju. Whereas more advanced Jaegers have more options. There's a really cool thing I noticed when I was rewatching just chunks of them, rewatching the movie and then rewatching a couple of chunks, is Cherno Alpha's thumbs, in quotes, fold into its palms, and then all four fingers wrap around it to just kind of make two big spring-loaded wrecking balls when it's punching a lizard in the face.
That's fun.
It's a very fun and it's just good. It's all good. Cover to cover, dude. It's fun. Gypsy's hands can transform into plasma cannons, both of them, four of her fingers and her thumb, because it's the trigger. They kind of rotate around into a three-fingered little, the Spock hands that I'm doing right now on camera.
Yep.
These transform into plasma cannons. This was designed and put on Mark III's and further up on Jaegers of these classes. They cauterize the wounds when they shoot a kaiju, because like I'd mentioned earlier when you guys had brought it up and kind of guessed the plot, but kaiju blood is incredibly toxic. when you kill one and it bleeds out, it's similar to an oil spill, and it's called Kaiju Blue. I think they reference ammonia a lot in the movie. I don't know if ammonia is like a blue chemical if it's exposed to oxygen. No fucking idea. Didn't look it up. But
that's as a funny way to call it, by the way.
Kaiju Blue?
Kaiju Blue. It's just like a rhyming thing. Like, boat don't float.
Yeah.
It's like, why do you say it like that?
I mean, they bleed blue, right? Like, it is like a blue. It is a blue. It's not a reference to just like, boy, all those pelicans covered in oil sure are sad.
Like, I thought it's like blue, like kaboom, you know?
Yeah. The Dawn Duck. Oh no, blue.
If you get touched, if you touch the monster blood, you actually turn into a thin blue liner. You put the bumper sticker on your truck and everything. So
absolutely,
like a blue smear across it.
Speaking of ducks and oil, I ran out of soap today, and I used some Dawn dish soap to wash my hair, and my hair is like especially curly and like bouncy today.
Remind me of a duckling, actually.
Yeah, and I was like, absolutely. I feel like a clean little duckling. Yeah.
It is honestly, the curls are kind of nice. You got little ringlets there.
Yeah, Dawn dish soap apparently is my soap. I need to start.
Well, there you go, listener. It's free if you want a looks max. But yeah, so it doesn't work completely as we see in the film, but the plasma cannons that Gypsy Danger uses does prevent a lot of the spillover into, because of course it's like, well, we wanted to stop nuking our own cities, and now we need a way to stop
poisoning
the blood
them instead.
Poisoning everything around them, basically. It's like, yeah, I guess that is very much like the train derailment thing. It's like, it's fine, go back home, actually. I know you can taste the air suddenly. Don't think about it. And your pets are all dead.
We'll just fight them in Flint, Michigan. Yeah. It won't matter.
That is truly the sacrificial lamb of the United States. Is
Flint. I mean, they got a few, but...
Yeah. Ow, fuck you. Goddamn cat, second time.
Stop looking like a little spider, dude.
I know.
Jamie the little duckling, Pete the spider.
Isn't there a spider somewhere you can harass?
Ethan the sexy shit? Gorilla. There's a t-shirt idea.
Ethan the sexy gorilla.
Or all three of them. But.
Oh, yeah. That's the Kong crew, the DK crew. So while effective, the Jaeger program eventually became way too expensive to maintain, so countries across the Pacific coastline decided to build a big fucking wall to keep the kaiju out.
Okay.
In 2025, a kaiju codenamed Mutavore breached the wall in Sydney, Australia in about an hour. Thankfully, though, Australia's own Striker Eureka was there to kill it with minimal collateral damage. So Striker Eureka has, yes, big scissor swords, it's very fast, and its entire chest opens up, and it just has six huge fucking cannons inside of it to just blow the shit out of a kaiju when it shows up. Mutavore, after getting through the wall, really didn't stand a fucking chance whatsoever against Striker.
Yeah, g'day, mate. How you going?
You should look up the characters from the movie, Herc and Chuck Hansen, because they sound basically exactly like that. I don't think they hired Australian actors whatsoever. So despite her victory, the fact that Striker cost over $100 billion to build meant that she was still brought to the Shatter Dome, the Jaeger base in Hong Kong. Great name. Along with her pilots, the father and son, Hercules and Chuck Hansen, to be decommissioned. The new kaiju-specific field of science called K-Science was created, which led to the discovery of the breach down in the Mariana Trench between two of Earth's tectonic plates. After multiple years of study, they found out this was the alien portal. So that's like some hostile force was sending the kaiju through. So I think, personally, Loreboy's canon, the earthquake was the portal opening up and forcing two tectonic plates.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Opposed to like some other theories that I saw were just like, it was the first footsteps that trespasser took caused an earthquake. And I'm like,
but why wouldn't all the other footsteps cause an earthquake?
It's also under fucking water.
Yeah. I don't care if you're 500 feet tall. Tectonic plates are much bigger than that.
Yeah, exactly. Also that, yeah. It's like, yeah, like a chunk of the planet is going to be displaced by a 300-foot reptile standing on it at the bottom of the ocean where there was a quintillion tons of water sitting on top of it.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's buoyant at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not even a person in a mech suit could wield the Canadian shield.
No, exactly. You know, there was an episode I wanted to do. There's like old folklore that I might still look into of there is a, allegedly giants that live somewhere on Bouclier Canadien, the Canadian Shield up in Quebec. Oh, yeah. Like all the granite that we have. Yeah, I haven't looked into it yet, but it's on my list. So
there's a lot of Ontario basements that are just rocks, and they basically build the foundation on the rock because it's illegal to drill into the Canadian Shield.
Yeah, it's also incredibly hard because it is all
granite,
billion-year-old granite. It's not worth the time. I love that section. Yeah.
To close the loop on Max and Herc, or Herc and Chuck.
Chuck
and
Herc. Yeah.
Chuck, the son, is from Sussex, England. Well, the actor, and Herc, the father, is an Italo-American from New York City. So you're right, Peter. Yeah. neither of them are Australian.
I watched the movie 3 days ago. I can't do an Australian accent very well, but it's better neither than that. So naturally, after discovering the breach, humanity tried to send bombs through the portal, which as far as listening to my own voice, that sounded sarcastic. It's a great fucking idea, right? It's just cheap.
They're sending their bombs. Monsters. Yeah, someone sends some fucking bombs back at them.
Exactly.
All the nukes that we're not going to use on our own soil, send them through.
Where are we here? Right. However, every time that they tried to send something through, some kind of security measure that people hadn't figured out yet would reject the bomb and just send back anything that we were trying to send through. Okay. In the film, we find out that the breach... It's all techno-organic, so there's like lightning and electrical bits, but there's also kind of like anemone, like kind of rounded tentacles that check shit. Sure.
So there's a sphincter that opens and closes it.
Yeah, there's a cloaca. There's a big old ostrich dick in there. And it checks.
Keep the nukes out.
That would be so funny to be the guy who was in charge. Well, not really funny, but you're charged to throw the nuke in, you start swimming away, and it just pops right back.
I figured they'd drop it from a ship.
Hey, hey, Jim! Can you go poke it back in? It seems to have slipped out there.
It's just like it's like the hook that you use to like pull a thing out of a pool. You're just like trying to shove it back down. Really? You got like the pool boy Jaeger trying to like stuff a bomb down the breach. So in the film, it's compared to like a barcode scanner. So all the tentacles and all the like gross little bits in there in within the breach all like check what's coming through. And it's just like, nah, no bombs through here. Nope. Sorry, rejected. Only giant lizards. That's all. And sometimes a crab, which we do see in the movie.
Right? The magic butthole portal is more effective than the TSA, is what we're saying.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, granted, the crab did have to take, like, 10 shoes off, but that's only because we tried to smuggle bombs through the other way that were completely ineffective. Yeah.
You've heard of Iron Dome, but now they're pushing the bombs back with their tongue through the hole.
Oh my god. So yeah, the breach, the barcode scanner, the Iron Dome only lets through kaiju DNA, basically.
Okay.
It can, however, be tricked. As we see at the end of the film, Raleigh and Mako piloting Gypsy Danger just ride a dead kaiju through the breach and end up in the antiverse. You guys can open up the image there. It's the kind of eclipse looking area.
Okay.
Exactly. This is the home dimension of the beings who've been both manufacturing and sending the kaiju to Earth. The K-scientist and kaiju fanboy, this is the Osama bin Laden tattoo guy, Newton Giesler, who is played by Charlie Day, who you can bring up here, who looks kind of weirdly handsome in glasses and a button-up.
I think he's always been pretty handsome.
When he's not huffing glue and eating cat food, he looks all right, right?
Yeah, I think he's always been charismatic and handsome, but yeah, that's just me. Yeah.
Jamie's got a crush on him.
I love him. I want to kiss him on his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You could check out his kaiju tattoos.
I want to mash cloacas.
Yeah. I want to show him my library of ostrich dick photos.
A bunch of ostriches with teeth. So Newton Giesler. He's the one who presents the theory that the kaiju are clones or are at least being created. I've always found the dialogue in the film, at least in this section, a little clunky, but I don't want to get like too nitpicky about it because it is good. He does autopsies on like kaiju organs and whatnot. So he does notice that, like, despite the exterior differences of the kaiju, a lot of them are built on a similar framework and have, like, identical organs, despite one, he's like, oh, one looks like a shark, one looks like a crab. They all look kind of, they'll look kind of different. They're all built off the same thing. So it's, his theory is that he's presenting is that, like, look, I'm pretty sure these things are being sent intentionally, and they're being built because every time we kill one, we find the same shit on the inside. So there's, like, there's clues that he starts putting together, right? So in the film, his character actually uses the Jaeger technology to drift with a piece of kaiju brain and is able to see some of its residual memories of it, like, being manufactured. And then he sees like little, like,
he links with it. He sees another kaiju with his kaiju wife. It's like, oh, we got the cup kaiju again. Damn.
Yeah, that's what they sent through. They sent through the bat monster, lizard monster, the cuck monster that they sent through the portal, right? But yeah, he gets to see it, like, getting manufactured, like, little fragments of memories. It's, of course, just, like, a piece of a brain. They do kill the kaiju. When they kill Otachi, the pregnant one, the inflation porn one, they manage to, like, plug the drift technology into the brain of the fetus.
Okay.
The and baby. Then, like, scan it. And that's how they're just like, oh, no, wait. Like, our original plan is not going to work, actually. We need to ride a corpse through the drift. I guess, retroactively, if you're starting the episode now, spoilers for Pacific Rim that came out 10 years ago. Just so you're aware. the aliens, in quotes, sending the kaiju are known, and I cannot fucking believe I had to say this word again after swearing off Halo forever. The aliens sending the kaiju are called the Precursors.
Precursors.
Yeah, nice. We're here. And you guys can open the last photo there and see what the Precursors look like. Some concept they look art. Cool.
This is very Guillermo del Toro. They're very Hans Labyrinth, cool. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're very much the hand thing or the Angel of Death and Hellboy sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
Del Toro,
like,
art.
Fleshy, sinewy. They got, like, crab pincers for feet, and
but they're, like, absolutely arm. Slaying on those heels of crab pincers.
Oh, right, absolutely,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, they're also, they have, like, every single body part they have, like, where it splits is splits in the wrong spot. If you had, like, a human body, right?
Yeah,
very
alien.
Yeah. I love them. I think they're very, very cool. You only see them for a few seconds at the end of the film, and they don't say anything. They just watch Gypsy come through the fucking portal and then blow up and kill them. Basically, is their only purpose. So the Precursors are a hyper advanced civilization who manufactures gigantic monsters to wipe out life on other planets, allowing for easy colonization. This is all memories that both Charlie Day's character and the German guy whose name I did not write down. When they basically, they're drift compatible, and they both drift with the dead Otachi baby to get all the secrets and not kill either one of them. So
okay.
They're very much like he's Charlie Day is a hotshot scientist, and then the stuffy German guy with the cane is just like, oh, no, you could never drift with the kaiju. That'd be ridiculous. But then they do it, and they become friends and kiss, probably. I have no idea.
Yeah, does Charlie Day's character be like, oh, it was wrong to, like, worship these things and think they were cool now that I realize what they were made for, or is he still Team Kaiju?
No, so there's not so much characters. Everybody has a very static arc in the entire film.
Yeah.
I think the biggest change is that Idris Elba's character of Stryker Pentecost is just like, I will allow my adopted daughter Mako to pilot this Jaeger with Charlie Hunnam's character, Raleigh.
Okay.
And then the scientists realize that Charlie Day was right. That's essentially it. That's just all the development you're going to get.
There you go.
Yeah. Also, the dickhead Australian kid sacrifices himself with Idris Elba. Instead of, he stops being a bully. So Chuck dies.
Okay.
Basically.
Good.
Leaves his bulldog behind.
We stop bullying, people die.
So continue bullying, I think, is the moral of Pacific.
That's Pete's message.
Absolutely.
So some of the memories that the scientists absorb here is that the Precursors came to Earth originally during the time of the dinosaurs, which you guys had brought up earlier.
Okay,
but they were just like, ugh, us gross monster aliens. The atmosphere is not polluted enough. We're gonna kick it for a while, check in every once in a while, and just see. Thank God humanity has done just enough global warming for the kaiju to survive on Earth.
Yeah.
Which is straight up like a paraphrase of a line that Charlie Day's character actually says. That Dr. Newt says, like, we did it with all the global warming, and then just like talking about how like this is how they can survive now. They waited right up until the kind of the atmosphere had changed just enough. Now, of course, if you know anything about geological history, this makes no fucking sense at all. Because if they could, you know, open portals through time, which revealed later that is what they are doing, just do it during like the great dying between like the Permian and the Cambrian or whatever.
The Cambrian age.
When Russia exploded and all the volcanoes on Earth dumped acid into the sky. Like, you don't have to do this.
Right? I like the idea that they come in, it's too clean though. Like a kaiju sits down in a room, is like, would someone light a cigarette?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody close a window. God.
Yeah, exactly. The precursors could only invade Earth once it was legal to smoke indoors, right? Like, it's just like that came and went in our lifetimes.
I remember sitting with my mom in the smoking section and eating dinner, and her having a cigarette lit right there.
Oh yeah, me too. My dad was telling. I thankfully never saw this, but my dad was telling when he and my grandfather went to Africa. He was just like, yeah, every single person on the plane was just smoking the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, the cabin is just full of cigarette smoke.
A plane would make me crazy, dude. Like,
I found a bar in Poland that let you smoke in the basement, and I wasn't even smoking that much at the time, but I was like, I'm buying a pack, and I'm going through half of it tonight. Just the novelty of smoking in a smoky bar, I'm like, I'm not going to get this anywhere else.
When I went to Pittsburgh with my dad and my brothers, we were bar hopping, so we were doing like one drink at every bar along some strip in Pittsburgh, and we got to one bar, which was a smoking bar. They still allowed smoking indoors.
Your dad got stuck.
They had a big cigarette vending machine like right in the front.
That's cool.
Bought me like four tequilas there, essentially. Like, we just sat and had four drinks because he was having such a time with it.
I was gonna say, you'd have to stay there after that.
And that's the only one of the four of us who smoked, so
yeah. But he was probably footing the bills too, right? So
yeah, most of them.
Yeah. That's a good deal. It's a good deal.
So the fact that they had to wait for a smoking section is also the reason the kaiju blood is toxic. That is their strategy. They're like, if our giant crab is killed, it can at least do some polluting, like, posthumously, right? Sure.
Would some people go outside and die already?
Yeah, exactly.
We need to fix this place.
So other than seeing them right at the end of the film, nothing is explained about the precursors other than it appears as though their universe or their planet is dying. They're not named. No one refers to them. No one says anything about them whatsoever. They're just seen at the end after they drop, again, they drop Gypsy Danger through the portal, activate her self-destruct, and that is like the nuke that they use to end the kaiju war.
Okay.
So in a video about Pacific Rim that I alluded to earlier, in a video about Pacific Rim Uprising on the YouTube channel Pointless Hub, which you should all check out. I think it's very funny. The guy in the video talks about some interviews that director Guillermo del Toro had done covering what his potential Pacific Rim sequel would have been. So again, del Toro's curse. He had an idea for a second movie, and it was fucking canceled, and he moved on to make that movie where the deaf lady fucks a fish.
The Shape of Water.
That's it, yeah. Didn't see
what?
That. Yeah.
It's like a fish guy.
Hulu, dude. Hulu Presents.
Definitely. That's
you
not
need
the
your Cloaca movie. That's probably it.
That one's definitely got some Cloaca on Cloaca mansion.
That's not the lady who jerked off the dolphin who was living in the.
No, that's a true story.
That's a documentary.
Oh, okay.
That dolphin's name, I'm pretty sure, was Peter. So.
It was. It definitely was. Yeah. That rings a bell. He's the horny little.
I hope you guys are lying to me.
Pete's not the spider anymore. Now Pete's the dolphin.
So Del Toro in interviews explains that while maybe he was a horny little spider, he'd liked to have revealed that the precursors were straight up human beings from tens of thousands of years in the future, and that their alien bodies were just fully organic suits. So, like, the cool alien design things that we looked at earlier is just, I guess, in my head, I didn't find anything about this, but Loreboy's canon, it's like the logical endpoint of the Jaeger. Like, we made our phones smaller and smaller and smaller until we needed to jack off watching porn on them. So now the screens are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You would make your Jaeger smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller up until the point where you were just a horrible four-legged, like, lobster monster. And now you need to jack off and on a bigger and bigger screen, right?
Gotcha, gotcha.
We're at that point where
everything evolves into the same, into a lobster. What's the thing that everything evolves?
Personization or whatever. Like, turning into crabs.
It turns into crabs, yeah. So we're, we're all meant to be crabs so we can jerk off or whatever. I've been playing Crab Champions lately, and I definitely want to jerk off. Peter's getting, having someone.
Is there someone? Is there an ostrich steak in your apartment? Like, what's going on?
Some of my neighbors have dogs, and I just heard a dog, like, pain screaming through the door.
Oh, no.
My cat's, like, perched up like a little gargoyle here looking. Anyway, sorry. A lot of cat distractions on my end tonight.
Very distressing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was a fucked up noise, which that's why it got me.
You probably develop some sort of, like, exoskeleton, like, war machine that we can use to kill all the animals in your building, honestly.
spare my four, and then, yeah.
Well, they're kind of the main distractions of this episode. So
they're collateral, yeah. It's nice that I'm suffering multiple animal attacks during our episode about Pacific Rim. I think it's very convenient. I'm glad that Dusty's on board. So yeah, the alien bodysuits, the precursors, are not officially canon, considering that movie never came out. But I think the wrapping around to being time-traveling the man is the real monster is kind of stupid. I'm sure that the execution would have been good.
Yeah, like you're kind of like you're turning your nose up at it, but like this, like the whole
I know.
Premise is stupid, but it's fun, stupid, right?
Like exactly.
I absolutely think you have to like lean into those tropes if you're going to make a successful sequel like that. Like you have to like lean into the tropes one ratchet higher, right? Like you got to keep going with it. So.
I don't doubt that it would have been executed perfectly in the same way that like Pacific Rim already was. There just is something about like, oh no, actually it's humans time traveling back to wipe us all out. But in 2013, when it's just like, you know, guys, if you made giant polluting lizards, you really could have just sent them back to before gunpowder. At any
right,
like, yeah. You just send back two, I guess, and pollute twice as fast.
Maybe it's a time traveling alien butthole that's like hard to control. Like maybe it's hard to aim. You know?
Oh, it's like the breach is incontinent.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, contract and expand that sphincter.
I think there's a nice circularness to it. Like there's these big kaijus or whatever. Then they die and then they let all this oil out. And it goes under the ground, and it creates dinosaurs. And then the dinosaurs grow up, and they let out all these oil. Or they just die, and they're dinosaurs. And it creates oil, which creates kaijus, which creates dinosaurs. And, you know, it's just a big cycle of dinosaurs and kaijus all the way down.
It is beautiful, you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Life finds a way.
Pacific Rim. Yeah, that's what Jeff Goldblum was talking about. that has been Pacific Rim. I have been your host. I have been inside your brain. I'm in your head. My name is Peter O'Donnell. You can find me at Loreboy's Podcast on Instagram. Check out our pictures. Check out all our stuff.
Tell us. Yeah. Jamie, you want to talk about anything?
Loreboy James on Twitch, twitch.tv/LoreboyJames, Tuesdays and Thursdays around 7 to 8 p.m. EST. If you join the Discord, discord.gg/loreboys, then you will be able to see when those notifications go live. I'll let you know there. And that's where all the cool shit's going on. Loreboys. Discord.gg, Loreboys. You got loser title games for the patrons. They're right now. They're lubing up their thumbs, ready to guess.
They're chomping at the bit.
Yeah,
we're late.
It's like 10:15 on a Monday, and usually we're supposed to put it like 8 on a Monday, but times have been Easterin. So
hey, listen, it was a holiday weekend. I just had to go out for the first time in a while. Yep. Also, now my cat is chewing on my face because of my headphone ropes. Let's look at this devil.
You should probably deploy her to go deal with that dog.
If you like the show, please consider leaving us a review and telling your friends. And hey, just you and me here, listener. Fucking
Guillermo del Toro.
Fucking, yeah, it's me. Hey, it's me, Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo del Toro. Do it. do the thing. I know you've been thinking about it, leaving us a review. And I know you've been telling yourself, I should do that because I listen to this show all the time and I love it. And it's so great. Just do it. Just do it. Leave us a goddamn review right now. Okay? Or we'll send our Chinese drones after you.
You could you leave it anywhere. Apple Podcasts, all the podcast apps you have. Selloutvacations.com. Leave us a review there.
Selloutvacations.com.
All of them. Yeah.
And if you want to support the show, like Jamie said, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/loreboys. Check that out. And if you don't trust Patreon, we of course have Lore Boys Prime, a service that we've always offered. So we are, of course, the cutting edge of scientific advancement. We have a lot of Rule 34 artists over here working on various beakers and flasks and things of that nature. Obviously,
it's got like a beaker. It's just like the sticker on the outside in like, you know, the beaker font on the red, on the white label, right? It's just like horse porn on the outside. Just like, exactly. Like so sun. It's like swirling it around.
A lot of that happening over here at Lore Boys HQ, because obviously we're trying to make drift technology happen. I personally have been up, I mean, like, I've been doing 16-hour days just watching the third Fast and Furious movie on repeat, trying to crack this thing, honestly. But we really need your help to get the next step there. So obviously,
we've all got to Paul walk before we can Paul run, you know? And we're trying to figure it out.
And I mean, I need to find out if any of us are Tokyo Drift compatible, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, if you guys... Honestly, if you guys have any scientific breakthroughs, please let us know. Please tell us. If you guys find a scientific breakthrough on drift technology, please, can you tell us before you tell anybody, like before you tell like Forbes or whatever?
Oh God, don't tell Forbes. Jesus Christ.
I mean, guys, we're better than Forbes. Come on.
Business Insider, maybe.
No, don't tell like Business Insider article. Either. Come on. Peter, stop giving them ideas. Come
that's
on.
That's not where you send academic journal.
I'm serious. Don't send it to Forbes, guys. Send it to us instead, okay? Yeah. Jamie will give you a rim job. Pete will show you his ostrich dick if you just give us your scientific breakthroughs first and foremost. The Lore Boys, please. We love you. Please. I'm begging you. Get us the Tokyo Drift technology. Get me the Yin Yang Twins on the phone.
Get me the Yin Yang Twins and this BI itch.
I think that would cut you.
Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.